Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me are the Galaxy Twins here, Mr. Chad Riley and Spencer Williams.
Howdy.
Hey.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, we actually did that right. Howdy, hey. We really are twins.
Yeah.
You guys are doing too much. This is an exciting week for all fans of Marvel films, as this week marks the debut of Avengers Infinity War. So we're going to take you through a little bit of a crash course and dive into that. But before we do, Chad's going to give us a little bit of info.
Am I?
I would hope so.
Okay, I will. When the galaxy is collapsing around you, the Filmlosophers podcast will probably still be presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. What can we say? We're creatures of habit.
That we are.
Gotta catch them all. Our episodes, that is. Subscribe to the Filmlosophers podcast on any or all of your favorite streaming platforms, including Audioboom, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, Libsyn, and Player FM.
Was that a Pokemon reference?
No, it was. I was going to bring that up. Gotta catch them all.
Infinity Stone / Pokemon, fun, playful way of saying you can find us anywhere you want. Come on now.
Okay, I thought you were thinking, you know, Captain America was going to have a Pikachu during this movie or something.
Pikachu!
You know what? Until you see the movie, you don't know if that's going to be true or not. So, # twinsies. New episodes debut each Wednesday.
Gather every hero you find and prepare to save the world. And make sure your group includes us. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers. And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Finally, you don't need an Infinity Stone to access our entire library of great content. Just visit our website at filmlosophers.com and be amazed.
Amazed. I'm amazed.
Well, I'm always amazed. The fact that we have now three people on this show as opposed to two. We have Spencer being a big part of this, and I don't know if we've ever mentioned it before, but you know what? Spence, thanks for being on the show.
Hey. You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm only going to be nice once in a great blue moon.
Yeah, that's it for the year.
That was so thoughtful.
I know, and it was out of nowhere, and I didn't really have time to enjoy it either.
Okay, you can listen to it back later.
As we said, this is a really tremendous week for comic book fans, as we all have been anticipating this week. We all have been anticipating this Friday. We have all been anticipating 2018.
All I have to say is I started reading comic books, Marvel comic books in particular, in like 1990.
Uh-huh.
When I was a wee lad.
A wee lad.
So in a way, I've been waiting for this movie ever since then. 28
True.
Years.
That's right. We are talking about Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War to be exact. The movie that is to cap all of these, phase three. The film that is to cap phase three and be the culmination of everything that has come before that for the past 18 films.
10 years.
So before we get into it a little bit more, why don't you, Chad, give us that official synopsis goodness. I am all over the place. Leave me alone.
That's okay. Well, you still trust me, which is remarkable. Iron Man, Thor, the Hulk, and the rest of the Avengers unite to battle their most powerful enemy yet, the evil Thanos. On a mission to collect all 6 Infinity Stones, Thanos plans to use the artifacts to inflict his twisted will on reality. The fate of the planet and existence itself has never been more uncertain, as everything the Avengers have fought for has led up to this moment.
That worked really well with the music. I'm just going to have to give you that.
Yeah, that
stuck the
awesome.
Landing, folks. He stuck the landing.
Directed by the outstanding Russo brothers, this film stars a whole plethora of a cast, including Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Benedict Cumberbatch, Don Cheadle, Tom Holland, Chadwick Boseman, Paul Bettany, Elizabeth Olsen, Anthony Mackie, Sebastian Stan, Danai Gurria, Letitia Wright, Dave Bautista, Zoe Saldana, Josh Brolin, Chris Pratt, and many others. I mean, there's a lot of people in this
movie. So many people.
So many people.
This marks the 19th film, as we said, released by Marvel Studios in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This film also marks the 10th anniversary of Marvel Studios and its inception of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Its first film, Iron Man, was released back in May 2nd of 2008, while Avengers Infinity War will be released on April 27th, 2018. According to Marvel Studios, there are around 64 main characters in this film. And listen to what I'm saying. Not just characters, not just anybody, 64 main characters.
Like, y'all better pay attention to them.
Yeah, seriously. And end scene.
That was incredible. That is that from the soundtrack?
It is from the soundtrack.
Oh, I can't wait for this movie.
So, as we said, this is a film that a lot of people, like Chad was talking about, a lot of people who have been reading comics all their life, this has been kind of the culmination of that point. You know, reading about this, seeing the images, and wanting to see this put on the big screen. And we're here. I mean, we have spent the last 10 years in a Marvel Cinematic Universe that has been created by Marvel and Disney and from the brain works of, like, Kevin Feige as well, but, like, John Favreau,
yep,
and the Russo brothers,
James Gunn,
and
Taika Waititi.
I mean, now, seriously, there's so
Ryan Coogler.
Man, anybody else I'm missing?
Everybody.
Everybody. Just pretty much.
Goodness, who do I go with? Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh
did the first Thor.
Yeah.
Some other guy did the second Thor.
I don't remember. I don't think anybody remembers.
Did Kenneth do the
second
one?
I think he did the second one.
He did the second one, too. Let's see. Who did... Joe Johnston, I think, was the guy that did the first Captain America.
Okay.
He was the guy that did the Rocketeer back in the 90s.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
Brought him in for that. I don't remember... Oh, gosh, what was his name? Iron Man 3.
Oh,
A big... Shane Black?
Yes. Yeah. Shane Black.
Yeah.
There's so many different people that have attributed to the success of what Marvel has become now, and we are at
Joss Whedon. Hello.
Oh, of course, Joss Whedon, first Avengers.
Sorry, my brain's still working.
No, I mean, we're all in that same boat, you know, just trying to figure it all out. It's pretty incredible to say that we, as a fan base, have sat through 10 years worth of movies, 10 years worth of a franchise that continues to produce great projects, great stories.
Can I just take a moment, because I was doing some mental math based on what I said a few minutes ago about 1990. The Marvel Cinematic Universe has now been around longer than I was around before I started reading comics.
Huh.
Just blowing my mind. Like, I was younger when I started reading comic books than the age of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is now. Like, the universe is older in its presentation of awesomeness,
yeah,
than I was when I first got engaged. Sorry.
Engaged with comics.
With comics, yeah.
This isn't one of those societies, Chad.
It's, you know, there are arrangements that are made sometimes.
Oh, we need to check what's in that cup. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the... It's water. I promise. H2O.
But it goes to say there's a lot you could really say that attributed to the success of this franchise altogether.
Contributed. Yeah.
Thank you.
Contributed to the success. Yes.
And it's really...
Or you could say the success can be attributed to many things.
It's been a long day.
Dealer's choice.
Either way. This is going to be a fun episode, ain't it?
No, it is. It already is.
But so we're at this point where all roads have come to a crossing point, if you will, and have converged into this one singular storyline, which is the big threat coming down, wielding a weapon that could very well wipe out the entire existence of the universe itself. And it's interesting to see that this was the direction they chose. It's interesting to see, you know, that this film, this franchise, had been already bit like primed and ready back at the beginning. This was the end goal they were wanting to go for after 10 years. And I know we're not talking about like future yet, but it just blows my mind as to what they were already storyboarding back when they were doing like the first Iron Man back in 2008, like it's incredible to think that's all that they had then, and they were building towards this.
And they've done an incredible job. I mean, they've built something that literally the world has never seen. Like, this is a multi-franchise. Like, it's a mega property in cinema. And, of course, obviously, it has brand extensions into toys and clothing and back into the comics. Some of the comics now reflect the movies more than the other way around in terms of character design, demeanor, tone, etc. So, I mean, the impact of this, like, massive group of creative projects, it's changed the terrain in many ways. And, yes, I'm gushing because I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
I grew up specifically reading Marvel Comics. Not that I didn't read DC also. But, I mean, also, give credit where credit is due. They've done a really bang-up job.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, in a good way. A very positive job. They've had very few flops. And,
oh, very true.
And not even necessarily the entire film was a flop, but just, like, key moments in the film didn't quite land right.
Yeah.
And so you're left feeling like, oh, that wasn't the same level of quality that I'm used to with the other ones, but it was still good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things we always reiterate on the show is the fact that we are not solely loyal to just one particular franchise or fan base or studio or whatever it may be. We are fans of great storytelling. We've said that several times on this show, and that's what has always, you know, persevered in terms of every time we do any other review, whether if it's a Sony film, a Disney film, a Paramount film, a Marvel film, a DC film. We've looked at it from the scope of how well did they tell the story.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the things that, and we've also said this several
all
times.
All things considered, by the way. I mean, we talk about soundtrack, costuming, makeup when appropriate, graphics. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just the storyline itself. There's a lot that goes into a movie, and we like to look at as much of it as we can.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the great things. Like, when we brought Spence on, Spence began to take notice of, like, how unique some of the aspects that we didn't really pay attention to, like the clothes and the design and even the soundtrack. It was, you know, really great having you bring that all up.
Soundtracks are my jam.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Did you mean for that to be a pun?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, he did.
But, yeah, that's one of the things that I think we can legitimately say with Marvel is that the storytelling has more times than most been on point. And that is why it's obvious in the result of what kind of anticipation and hype has been set up for this film. Everybody has been so engaged and sold on this storyline that people are literally waiting, even now, in line at movie theaters to get in to see the film at certain theaters. You can't make that kind of hype up.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
So, Spence, when did you start seeing, when did you start getting into the Marvel film franchise? Or even Marvel Comics? Where does your fandom start?
Definitely the movies, because, you know, they started showing up and I was like, well, I'll go take a look at this and hopefully it'll be cool and not like Titanic or
I'll
something.
Be a Huckleberry.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know what to say to that, so I'm not going to say anything.
There you go.
Yeah, like, it's off. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Eddie gave me the soundboard this week, and I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it, really.
He's lost. Let me, here, you answer the question.
Anyway.
And I'll fiddle with
so,
this.
I can't remember even, like, well, I know I saw Iron Man, but I know it doesn't count, but did the first Hulk movie, was that a...
It was not part of the MCU.
Yeah, I remember that.
Wait, which Hulk film are you talking about?
Eric Bana.
Eric Bana?
Ooh. Man, that was a train wreck.
It was. It remains a train wreck. It's still... you can catch it on TV every once in a while, and you're like, yeah, that just didn't age well either. Like, there's nothing about it that really works. Oh, okay. Mercy.
Yeah. So, anyway. yeah, saw like the Sony Spider-Man films, and those were good until 3 came out.
Truth. Let's not speak of
Emo Parker.
Emo ever. Parker. Emo jazz dancing Parker.
Yeah, so start off with that, and you know, those movies kind of drew me in, so I just kept seeing like the comic book movies. And they did get better and better with some stumbling blocks along the way that still, you know, eventually turned out well, like Thor.
Now, here's the thing that I'm glad that you're bringing up Thor.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you talk about something like the architecture of the mega story, then each individual property has a place within it. One of the things that I have really respected about all of the Marvel films, whether they're among my favorites or my less favorites, because they're all pretty darn good in my book. But the thing that I've always respected is the creators behind it and the studio heads allow each one to be fully what it needs to be. And for Thor, one of the things that was really difficult for audiences, and quite frankly, who can blame them? And we've talked about this before. The first two movies in the Thor franchise, especially the first one, but the first two movies, their job is to bridge the gap between, like, not only the Earthbound heroes and a broader universe where you see it for the first time because Thor is not from Earth, but also the history angle, like what things have happened way back in the distant past that Earth was not a part of, because it's sort of like map making, right? And for better or worse, those first two Thor movies, their job was to make the map a little bit bigger. And then you got Guardians, which made it a little bigger still. And then you got Thor Ragnarok, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
That finally let you appreciate just what you could do in that world without having to tell the history and do all of that, like that map making process. But they allowed the original two to be the map maker, to be the cartographers, if you will, of certain key elements of, you know, the broader universe. So that by the time you get to a Doctor Strange, where you're now going into other dimensions, so not space and time, but like the fabric of reality, or you start in Ant-Man to get a sense of like the quantum realm and that angle of, you know, different realms of existence.
Yeah.
It's not out of place. It's not out of nowhere. It's just stretching the canvas in a different direction.
Yeah.
No, I agree completely. And I think that was, sadly, that was kind of the cross to bear, if you will, for those first two films, because those first two films were rough.
Yeah.
When I mean first two films, I mean the first two Thor films, establishing the cosmic aspect of what the nine realms, if you will, or Midgard and Asgard, you know, and establishing that world as being the next layer of, you know, of environment for the MCU.
And also introducing you to the Gauntlet, introducing you to Thanos, through the Avengers, I guess, arguably, that's where you first had your Thanos connection with Loki. But I mean, that's all of this that we're going to be seeing in Infinity War, that broader universe crashing into the Earthbound level. All of that came from the Thor section, if you will, of the story. So, because again, they have the longevity, they have the history, they have, you know, the perspective.
Yeah.
That's different than your Captain America's or your Iron Man, Hulk, Black Widow, etc. So they had a hard road to walk, those first two films.
Yeah.
And it really only got easier for Thor, the character, when he was in the Avengers movies.
Yeah.
When he was blended into the bigger whole of, you know, the characters that you're following. And you realize he's actually charming and funny and really powerful.
Yeah.
You know, like things that you take for granted in his own story, because his own story is trying to accomplish something a little bit different.
And it adds the one thing that I've always appreciated about the Avengers films is that it always made the realization of how comical it was to interject somebody like Thor into a normal dynamic group. Like, you had everybody else who were from Earth, they talked normally. Then you had somebody from Asgard come in, and he talks Shakespearean, and it was just, it was comical, it was funny.
Sure.
And that's kind of where Taika Waititi took that entire premise and was like, all right, let's see how comical this could be, and thus made the success that is known as Thor Ragnarok.
For sure. Yeah, and but then, I mean, that wasn't the only flub, though. I mean, we definitely, there was a lot of criticism in the Iron Man franchise as well, which is the one that started all of this.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the character arc, the multi-film character arc that they decided Tony Stark slash Iron Man was going to go on from the beginning of his movie all the way to where we're going to see him now in Infinity War, where his worst fears that he's been kind of almost like a prophet, he's been kind of warning about this. Like, he's had nightmare visions when the Scarlet Witch messed with his mind in Avengers Age of Ultron, and he has seen destruction headed toward Earth.
Yeah.
He tried to stop it. He made something possibly just as bad as the thing that he was trying to stop in trying to protect it. But, like, he also went on a very personal, dark journey of his own, you know, with the PTSD and whatever that happened as fallout from the first Avengers film. So,
yeah, in the second film, yeah.
You know, there were things in the second and in the third that people weren't very fond of.
Yeah.
You know, but similarly to what I was mentioning with Thor, that those films had a specific place in the architecture of the broader story. They tended to really focus more on the architecture specifically around the main character versus the universe itself, because Iron Man right now is the fulcrum upon which everything tilts in terms of your protagonists because he kicked it off, and RDJ is just a force of nature at this point. Robert Downey Jr.
Yes. So, like we said, the film debuts this Friday. What we wanted to do tonight is we wanted to sit down and we wanted to chat about, we wanted to give ultimately a crash course on our thoughts of Infinity War, what to expect, what are some of the things that we, you know, our opinions lie on in terms of, you know, Thanos' ability, you know, Captain America, Bucky, everything else in between. So we're going to give you ultimately a crash course conversation on our thoughts. And one of the first things I kind of want to dive into is pretty much the most general question that you can ask and pose a question to the table. What are some of the expectations that we have for the film in terms of maybe, you know, certain elements being found, certain battles happening, certain characters? Because we did mention that there's supposedly supposed to be 64 main characters. I only know of maybe like 10, 15, and I'm still uncertain of where the other 50 are coming from. So I'm kind of at a loss because I'm trying to think, and it's like, you know, you have your handful, which is like, you know, just the main ones, along with Guardians of the Galaxy. That's another, what, five? It's difficult to figure this whole thing out.
Actually, out of all the things that, like, I could potentially think about in Infinity War, that's the one that I just can't wrap my head around. Like,
the 64.
Yeah, there's too many people. Like, how in the world are you going to tell a story with that many people and then, like, give everyone screen time and then have a coherent story in there somewhere?
So,
well, and I would say,
yeah,
arguably, it's...
Real quick, I just want to state, and I know we've said this on the show several times over, but Chad is our resident comic book expert. So when we talk, me and Spencer will say some just random stuff, but take Chad's word for it out of the three of us.
Oh, boy.
we're just like throwing darts at a dartboard, but Chad actually knows the layout of the actual dartboard and knows
sort
where
of.
Oh, don't
I mean,
be modest.
What I wouldn't give to have been in the writer's room, you know, with Marcus and McFeely, you know, breaking this story. That would have been incredible.
Okay, continue.
I think that just in terms of the way, like the flow of the entire 10 years of storytelling, this is now sort of your watershed. It's your logjam moment, actually. Everything has come to one point in the river, and there's something that needs to disrupt the flow of the river. And that something is Thanos, the Mad Titan. So I think that you actually have one main character and you have 63 other primary characters. So I think that one of the things that superhero films get criticized about time and time again, and it's warranted in many cases, is the bad guy problem, which is that character is there. They're not as fleshed out as the other ones. They're not necessarily doing really the smartest version of their plan that they should. They're there as a plot device, not as a character. What I think you can expect here is the opposite of that. Thanos has been played up for so long. Expectations are so high. And you've quite frankly got what I think are your aces in the hole, your wild cards, which would be Nebula and Gamora, as characters who have been firsthand, like had experience after experience after experience with him as their like adoptive father slash slave owner. So I think that they're going to be breakout. They're going to have some breakout moments because for a number of reasons I'll get into in a second, but I think Thanos is your main character in this story because if you can't get Thanos right, you don't have a movie worth showing.
That's so very true.
I think that everybody else is kind of on a level playing field. Obviously, you're going to have a little more prominence for the Chrises or for your Spider-Man or for your RDJ because of the stature of the performer and the fact that they've carried their own, like the movie has their character's name in the title.
Yeah.
But then I think that you've got so many incredible supporting characters. I mean, even Black Panther, we just saw Shuri and Okoye are two of the best characters that they've ever produced. So they're going to be as prominent as probably like as prominent as a Black Widow or a Winter Soldier or a War Machine or even as the Hulk. I don't know. Like you can definitely, because they're mixing and matching and changing the tapestry right in front of your eyes as they're telling the story. Because honestly, Thanos represents this extreme disruption. It's a rupture literally in reality. What he's doing is he's trying to collect all of these elements that's then going to completely shift and change the entire structure of the universe as we know it.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, he has to succeed or the stakes aren't high enough yet and you don't have a movie worth watching. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to give you at this point, kind of like Pixar. I mean, like,
yeah.
Even if it's not perfect, they're going to give you a movie worth watching. People are going to die. Stuff is going to change. There are going to be twists and turns you didn't see coming. And you're going to leave the theater with your jaw on the floor, whether you like it or dislike it.
What about you, Spence? What are your expectations? Wow.
Wow. He is thinking about this
one. He really was. Like, I could hear his brain steaming over there. I'm like, tss.
I don't know. Like, this movie is really hard for me to, like, have an idea about where they're going to go with because people's contracts are up. Like, there's a lot of people and that you could just kill off people and, like, they're gone and then you could bring him back later, like they did with Coulson. But it's really hard for me to say. I don't know. Like, there's just so many things they could do. I have no idea.
Wow.
I'm super excited to see it.
I think one of the biggest things that I'm expecting when we go and see it is, because one of the things I kind of invested in before, actually at last year's Comic-Con, was the omnibus for the Infinity Gauntlet. I'm not sure which, I believe it was the first time they introduced that whole Thanos' journey to find the Infinity Gauntlet, because I believe there's two storylines.
Yeah, there were it was the first, what we're going to see in the movie mostly would come from this versus the earlier versions of, they weren't originally the Infinity Stones, they were, I don't know what they were called. They were all, I think they were all soul stones of different characteristics. And then suddenly the soul stone was just one of many stones. Nobody needs to know that. I mean, those of us who read the stuff and care, we can know it and be excited, but general population doesn't need to know that backdrop.
But after investing in it, I've read it at least three times, and the idea of what Thanos is trying to achieve and the idea of where this whole that particular storyline went to in terms of the depths of, you know, self-sacrifice and being willing to have other people be murdered for the sake of the larger plan and, you know, all this stuff and all the characters that were in that, it made me excited for what to see here, because one of the things that not many people fully grasp is the full scope of what a fully armed Infinity Gauntlet can do, in terms of with all the stones. And it's incredible how in that comic book, just the things that he does, and he's battling like Infinity and he's battling Celestials, and there's all these crazy things in the comics. And I'm thinking, you know, Kevin Feige just confirmed with The Wrap, saying that they're looking to potentially start creating films based on the Celestials. And I'm like, wait a second, because that's actually a part of the storyline. And so I think one of the biggest things I'm looking to see, and one of the biggest expectations, is I want to see how far they'll go in terms of creating this large-scale battle against the Mad Titan of the universe, you know? I want to see this all out brawl, because I don't think the battle's going to solely be on Earth. I think this whole thing is going to go cosmic, which is where we've been leading towards, like we were saying with the whole Thor and Thor buildup and everything like
sure.
that.
Sure. Well, and clearly, there's something that happens in space. Before yeah. he gets to Earth, clearly there's something. I mean, in the trailer, you see the remnant of Asgard is gone, it looks yeah. like, and Thor is floating in space on his own when the Guardians recover him. It's, so
yeah.
something happens for sure.
Because especially after, if you've seen Thor Ragnarok, you know full well that, you know, there's, if you haven't seen it, you know, spoiler alert, I guess, but whatever. Asgard is
shame
destroyed.
On you.
Right? Seriously.
Or as Spencer might say, how dare you?
How dare you? You would have seen that the last remnants of Asgard, the people, are on a ship and they're sailing away from what was Asgard. And then you realize that at the beginning of the other trailer, and even at the footage that was released at D23, Thor was floating through space. Why was he floating through space?
In a field of debris.
In a field of debris. And it's like, oh my gosh, the opening scenes are going to be like so crazy because of the way Thor Ragnarok ended, with Thanos' ship appearing right next to it. So I'm really excited to see how much they're going to rely on the cosmic aspect of the environment and creating this ultimate battlefield of the stars, you know.
Well, not to mention there's going to have to be some way of addressing what in the world he does to Xandar, which is where
oh,
the Power
yeah.
Stone is, because
yeah.
that's where the Guardians left it at the end of Volume 1. And he has it clearly in numerous sequences we've seen in the trailers. So we know that he gets the Tesseract. Reality Stone?
I think it's the Reality Stone.
Or the Mind Stone.
No, the Mind Stone is
Mind
what...
Stone was in the staff. Never mind. Anyway, he gets the stone from... Loki stole the Tesseract back in Ragnarok, and he's going to come and get it. Whether he has the Power Stone already or goes for that later... By the time he
Space
gets
Stone.
To Earth, Space Stone, by the time he gets to Earth, he has both of them.
Yeah.
So he's done something to Xandar. And they were a very advanced civilization.
Mm-hmm.
They were like the peacekeeping force. I mean, the Nova Corps in the
yeah.
comics is like the peacekeeping force of the galaxy. So they're basically the Galactic Police. And so he's done something to them. You're going to see or hear reference of what he did to them.
Yeah.
To get that stone and keep them from taking it back from him.
One of the things that obviously I had mentioned a little bit ago is recognizing the power that Thanos will wield.
He'll weed it.
He'll will wheaten it. You know, he'll wield during this film and possibly in the next follow-up film, the Avengers follow-up film. And that is the Infinity Gauntlet. Now, not many people know what all the stones do. And we did do an episode on this not too long ago.
Sure.
But in a quick synopsis, Chad, why don't you give us the rundown on the stones that we have?
The ones that we've seen?
Well, the ones that we've seen and what they're like, just an example of what they've done.
Well, I mean, their names kind of give it away. So you've got the Space Stone manipulates space. The Mind Stone manipulates minds. Reality manipulates reality. That's the red one. That's the ether from Thor Dark World. Power Stone from Guardians, which you can wipe stuff out however you want. The Time Stone, which interestingly enough in the MCU, which is different than what happens in the comics, in the MCU, that's the green jewel in Doctor Strange's amulet, the Eye of Agamotto.
Yeah.
Which is why he can, you know, loop time and the things that he does against Dormammu. And in a couple other sequences in his standalone film. So, and then, let's see. So, space, time, mind, reality, power. And then you've got the Soul Stone, which is the one that hasn't appeared yet. And, you know, jury's still out. Is it going to be in this film or not? Who can say? Those who've seen it. Who aren't talking. But in terms of the storyline in this film, we know that the Mind Stone is on Earth in Vision's forehead.
Yeah.
And the Time Stone is inside the Eye of Agamotto with Doctor Strange. So, on the surface of things, at the very least, part of this story is a game of keep away.
Yeah.
They have two things that he wants. He has two things already by the time he gets here that he wanted. So, he's going to use those things against them to get the other two. Now, where the Reality Stone fits into any of this is anybody's guess.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, because I think that's...
It doesn't appear to be on the gauntlet in most of the sequences that we've seen.
Yeah.
But it could be there, and they edited it out. I mean, we saw footage from Ragnarok, for example, that comes from a sequence in the film, spoiler alert, after Thor loses his eye. But in the trailers, he had both eyes.
Right. Yeah.
They didn't give that plot point away. They re-edited things so that you didn't know it was going to happen. So in all reality... he could have more than those two stones in the gauntlet.
And that's one of the things where that particular stone, which is based off of the ether from Thor 2, is to our knowledge, in the hands of the Collector. Because it was brought to the Collector to hold. But it's really crazy because of the fact that each of these gems or stones have the ability to do incredible things together within wielded by a gauntlet. It's really interesting. How are they, and this is my question to you, Chad, how are they going to make it work where, because you obviously remember in the first Guardians of the Galaxy, when somebody tried to wield one Infinity Stone, they turned into like shriveled up mess and just exploded. What is it about the Infinity Gauntlet that allows them to wield all six?
That it's supposed to? I don't know that there's a whole lot of science behind it. It's kind of the way the story works. I mean, the gauntlet is the joining place of the different properties of the stones. So the gauntlet is a manifestation of, I guess you could say, like the confluence of their power or something like that. But... so it is channeling some of the energy so that the one wielding the gauntlet doesn't shrivel up, blow up, wither away, you know, whatever, what have you. Because honestly, I remember, yes, in Guardians, the Power Stone was like an overcharged battery and overloaded the circuit. In the Dark World, the Reality Stone was more like a toxin that slowly ate away at the body. So the way it impacted a very normal, mortal human woman, Jane Foster, played by Natalie Portman, the way that it impacted her was not by immediately overwhelming her system.
True, right? Very true.
Like it was changing her perception of her own reality and expressing itself out of her and sort of like deteriorating her health in the process. So depending on what the stone is and what it can do, that dictates the kind of impact it has on the person wielding it. They don't all have the same, they don't all make you explode, for example, like the Power Stone did in Guardians. The woman in the Collector's menagerie, when she grabbed hold of it, she couldn't hold the power and it exploded her.
And it's pretty cool to see. So I mentioned earlier the previous omnibus that we have of Infinity Gauntlet here and what it's capable of doing. And it's pretty scary to see all the things that the Infinity Gauntlet could actually do if they are looking at the comics as reference. Like there's a point where Thanos actually points the Infinity Gauntlet at Nebula at the time, which happened to be one of his soldiers, and instantly turns her into like an old woman, like decrepit mm-hmm. and old. There's a point where he ultimately becomes like this. It's almost like a astral projection of himself and takes over as Infinity, and which is a celestial.
Right.
It takes over that and becomes like Lord over time or everything, pretty much time and space. With the help of the gauntlet. So I'm really hoping that they really do a good job at portraying what all this gauntlet is capable of doing. But seeing as we don't know where most of the stones are.
Well, and to a certain degree, there's a whole other movie after this one. He doesn't need all of the stones in the gauntlet and doing everything in this movie. Quite frankly, it's interesting to note the time stone, which Doctor Strange has in the amulet, the time stone doesn't appear to be deteriorating him at all, or anyone else among, you know, his cadre of friends. So that one, maybe because it's in a housing of its own, but people are wielding it rather than the other way around. So, and that would be, for example, in the comics, that would be what Thanos uses to turn Nebula old all of a sudden.
Yeah.
He ages her through using the time properties of the time stone. You know, so if he doesn't have that, I mean, even by the climactic battle sequence of the film, then that's not exactly what's going to happen in this movie. But if he does get it from them, you know, maybe they do pay homage to that sequence and Nebula gets rapidly aged. I think, going back to my wild card statement earlier, I think Gamora and Nebula are your, like, they're the difference makers. One of the things that indicates that to me, and I could be totally wrong, but the Black Order, the four henchmen of Thanos, they have been referred to for a year and a half as the children of Thanos, which means Gamora and Nebula are also children of Thanos.
Yeah.
So those whole like battle arena sequences that you've heard those two sisters talk about, how Gamora always had to win and could never let Nebula win, and Nebula has a chip on her shoulder and all of that. Yeah. Also, Corvus Glaive, Proxima Midnight, Ebony Maw, and Cull Obsidian, or Black Dwarf. They would presumably also have been their siblings / opponents. So I think one of the things that you're going to see that maybe people don't expect is that there's a whole lot of heart. There's a whole lot of just personal, interpersonal subtext that they're going to weave into this.
Huh.
And like, Star-Lord doesn't have that with them. Spider-Man doesn't have that with them. Captain America, Black Panther, they don't have that. They're just enemies to them. But to these two women, Thanos is like an abusive father, and his children are their oppressive older siblings, potentially. So I think that there's a whole world of relational possibility that could be played upon and leveraged in this movie, completely aside from what the stones can do.
What do you think, Spence?
I think that sounds awesome.
And quite frankly, in my opinion, you should lean a bit in that direction, because otherwise you run the risk of making the stones and the gauntlet the MacGuffin that they've been the entire time, the potential MacGuffin the entire time. You've got to have something else for it to matter.
Which that makes complete sense, because if you think about it, like you said, then the hype, yes, it'll be achieved, but there's nothing of a wow factor after the fact. Everybody's already anticipated what the gauntlet's going to do. Like we were just talking about, the gauntlet has been already versed well in the comic books, so people have seen it, they've read about what it could do, they've seen to the extent of what the comics could do in terms of its power.
Sure.
But in terms of the surprise plot, I guess, if you will, I think you have something there, especially with how they pitted them in the last Guardians of the Galaxy film and allowed that relationship to kind of come to some kind of healing point.
Sure.
I think that's going to be something similar along the same lines as Thor and Loki. I think Thor and Loki are going to have something similar in terms of that relationship being a piece of the larger plot. I know I'm just driving at something, but I think much like how Gamora and Nebula are going to have, because let's be honest, and this is going to go into my next question. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. You don't see much of Nebula in the rest of the trailers, just like you don't see much of Loki in most of the trailers. You see in that opening sequence when he's handing the Tesseract to Thanos, but after the fact, you don't see him in any battles. You don't see him in anything.
Well, quite frankly, we've seen him surrounded by the Black Order.
Yeah.
The four of them surround Loki. So, and there's like a, what looks to be like a destroyed spaceship with bodies on the floor behind him is what it looks like.
No.
To the untrained eye.
I agree as well. Which goes to my next question. Who are some of the people you think are going to die? And I know I see a smile on Spence's face because this is what he's been waiting for. He's been wanting to talk about death since we started the episode. Spence is Thanos incarnate. He is ready to bring...
Wow.
That's just so mean.
So let's go ahead and start with you, Spence. Who do you think are one of the people who's going to die in Infinity War? Because, I mean, like you stated earlier, a lot of people's, in the reality of it all, a lot of people's contracts are going up. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who are wanting to talk about, you know, doing other things. And not to mention that Kevin Feige and a lot of the other creators have mentioned this film is going to change the landscape of what you have seen as the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the last 10 years. So, new chapters. So, what does that look like to you, Spence?
Well, I think both Chris Evans and Robert Downey's characters are probably going out. But I
so you mean Captain America and Iron Man?
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing.
But I think most likely they're probably going to take out Tony Stark in this one because with Wakanda now actually being an active power for Earth, you kind of can replace him. Like, you can have things powered by Wakanda. Hmm. You have Parker left over, who will take up the mantle of, well, not Iron Man, but, like, he'll still be Spider-Man, but now Wakanda-powered Spider-Man.
Wakanda-powered Iron Spider.
I don't even want to touch that. I'm not going to say a thing.
But, like,
the
I don't know.
Iron Panther Spider.
Just mix all of them together.
I am not going to say anything. So you think Captain America and Iron Man are both going to bite the bullet?
Well, not like I feel like they might push Captain America to the next one.
Okay.
But
so you think Tony Stark is going to die in this one?
Yeah.
And you think because of the fact that they already have a new power on Earth, like Black Panther?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. What about you, Chad?
Oh, boy. A lot of people are going to go.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot of people are going to go.
I wouldn't be surprised if the entire thing goes.
Really?
There's no way... And again, this is... Let's be super geeky for a second.
Sure.
And pretend like everything that you've read in the comics is similar to what you could see in the films. They've made some choices already that have tried to ground certain concepts in reality that are a little less tied down in the comics. But there's no way in the comic book sense, there's no way to overestimate what one could do with a gauntlet that is even mostly powered.
Yeah.
Not even fully powered. Because again, we don't know where the Soul Stone even is or if it matters in this movie. Presumably, it's going to show up. Because it's the missing piece that nobody has seen. Or if you have seen it, you didn't know that you were seeing it.
Yeah.
I think that's also fair to say. But even if he doesn't have all the stones in the gauntlet, if he has power, space, presumably they're going to get mind out of Vision. They could very well get time away from Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
At great cost, P.S. And I would say it's totally possible that they already have the Reality Stone and they just didn't want to give that away. The Reality Stone in particular is the really frightening one because you can distort people's perception of it. It looks like they are fighting Thanos, but they're actually killing each other. I mean, like, you could do things with these very primal elemental substances that completely distorts your understanding of what's even happening in the first place. And that goes both for the characters and the audience, because believe me, you're going to not be as omniscient as you want to be in this film. Your perspective is going to be limited and or suspect because you're viewing through the hero's eyes what's going on. You're with them. To a certain degree, you're a participant, but you're also a spectator. So, yeah, I mean, are there going to be epic battles? Yeah, this is basically 1 2.5-hour fight. It's a big, long sequence of battles with probably very little downtime. Maybe the heart-to-heart that we've seen between Scarlet Witch and the Vision, that's maybe a minute. I mean, like, it's not, you're not going to have a lot of those moments. There's no room for them. This is go time. This is the end of the universe, potentially. So I wouldn't be surprised if everything has completely morphed and shifted by the end, or at the very end, something happens that changes the stakes of the game or what you understand to be the stakes of the game entirely. So because you've got these elemental forces at work, and wielded by somebody who is smart enough to know what he's doing, Thanos is not a stupid villain. He never has been.
No.
He doesn't care. Like, he has an agenda. He knows what it costs other people for his agenda to be seen through, and he sees it through. So regardless of, even if it's his own daughters or his own other children, he'll delete them. He'll whatever, like, to achieve his end.
I like how, as Chad's saying delete them, he's doing the Kermit flail.
So again, there's no way to overstate what one could do, even with a mostly powered Infinity Gauntlet and the will to see something through, which has always been Thanos' defining characteristic, is that he has the willpower to make his vision a reality. His, not vision, the character. Make his goal a reality.
True. I think one of the things... So,
and by the way, I think Nebula is gone.
Okay.
I think she's going to have a huge sacrifice play, and it's going to mean a lot, especially to Gamora. I think giving Zoe Saldana as an actress a beat like that is... gold. It's absolutely brilliant, and will cause her character to become a different character than you've seen too. Gamora is a straight up killer in the comics sometimes.
Yeah.
And you haven't really seen that side of her yet.
I think one of the things, so obviously, like Chad stated, a lot of people are going to die in this film. It's already been stated they're going to change the landscape. You know, a lot of people are not going to be in existence, whether if it's through the power of the gauntlet or just the, you know, Thanos' ability to destroy. But I do believe one of the people, obviously the most obvious person, I feel like, is going to either perish or not be in existence in the first film, I strongly believe, is Captain America. Like, I believe without a doubt that is one person whom we probably won't see him for a while. Like, I believe he'll be back. I really do. I don't think Chris Evans will leave the character fully. I believe this is something that'll get revisited maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the road in terms of his character. But I think in terms of what he's going to be doing in this film, there's going to be something that's going to happen where he will no longer be in existence. The theory that I thought would be really cool is if, like, I don't know, he gets sent back to the 50s or 40s or whatever, like through the time stone or something. Something unique to that, because I began reflecting on, like you were saying, the visions that a lot of the Avengers were having in Age of Ultron. And the vision that he had was that he was back in the 50s with Peggy Carter and the rest of them. And in my mind, I was thinking, like, that'd be really interesting if they sent him back there, or he was sent back there as a way of removing him from the equation. Like, you know, hey, if you get out of my way, I'll send you back this way and you can go and live out your years with Peggy Carter, the love of your life, and this, this, and that.
Well, here's the other thing that's possible, and we don't know if it was when they were filming Avengers 3, which is Infinity War, or Avengers 4, which doesn't have a subtitle yet. Most of the Avengers characters were walking around on set in their old costumes. Yep. So he might not go all the way back to the 40s, but the outcome of the Battle of New York could be changed. Like, you could, with the Time Stone, with the Reality Stone, possibly with the Space Stone, I guess you could make an argument, but there are ways to change what has happened and make it no longer what has happened. Like, you can change phase one, phase two, or phase three events.
Yeah.
With the power of these stones. Will they do that? I don't know. I don't know how much brain power that would require from the audience to really, like, understand what you just saw. But, like, you could,
mm-hmm,
with these elemental forces, you could change history.
I think that's one, but I also know for sure, I feel like this is a definite, I think another person who's going to make a sacrifice play, like you were saying with Nebula, I think Loki is going to bite the bullet this time, for real. Because we've seen in instances where he's feigned his death and it was a ruse, and that was kind of the beginning part of, you know, Thor Ragnarok recognizing that. I think there's going to come a point where he's going to, in his ability to make it up to his brother, make the sacrifice play and truly die, saving his brother. So
sure, totally possible.
So I think those are some of the bigger ones, but I think overall, I think Chad hit it on the head. I think just pretty much the ability to wipe out all of existence is totally on the table, and quite possibly something that will probably surprise a lot of people at the end of the first film, seeing as, I don't know how he'll do it, but he'll be able to do it.
Yeah, he can do a lot of things that you don't expect. You don't even know to think about.
Yeah, which is interesting, because a lot of people that are... So we're trying to stay away from social media as much as possible because we don't want to see any spoilers.
And we I haven't.
No.
I don't know about either of you. No, I have not seen any spoilers on this film.
I have abstained. I am clean. Well, I'm mostly clean. But don't look at me like that, Spencer.
I'm just not going to say anything.
But the thing about that, don't hate. I'm hoping that, I forgot my train of thought.
Because you're so busy with that soundboard.
We didn't know it.
Yeah.
Clean, spoiler free.
Yeah. we've been trying to keep it spoiler free, but, a lot of people, one of the things that a lot of people are saying is that there are things that are going to happen in this film that even stuff we didn't even expect to happen, you know, in the most non-spoilery way they could say it. There's stuff in this film that we probably as an audience didn't expect to see in this film. And I find that very jarring, because there's a lot I'm not expecting to happen in this film, as I do. There's a lot I'm expecting, but I think the not expecting outweighs the expecting, because I've spent all this time kind of focused on, you know, what I know and what it could possibly be.
It's funny. You actually reminded me of a line that's repeated in Age of Ultron, which is Quicksilver's line. He says repeatedly, "You didn't see that coming."
Yeah.
And I'm like, actually, technically, Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, both in the MCU, got their powers from an Infinity Stone. Maybe he comes back.
Maybe he's in the Soul Stone.
Maybe he's a secret cast member that you never knew.
There you go.
I mean, anything's up for grabs, folks.
So as we wrap this up, I kind of wanted to go around the table and see, what are your guys' top three Marvel films? I know we tend to talk about it from time to time in terms of what we liked, what we didn't like, but I really want to know, where do you guys see yourself in terms of, like, your top three? And I know the person that's probably going to go through this a lot easier than the rest of us is Chad. So we'll go ahead and start with Chad in terms of your top three and why.
How pleasant.
You're welcome.
Thank you. It's very kind. I would say, in no particular order, but definitely in this order, Guardians 1 is number 3. Ragnarok is number two. I know that makes me unpopular. People like Guardians more than Thor. I thought Ragnarok was one of the most exciting, fun films I've seen in a very long time, regardless of what universe it fits in. It was just fun. I mean, you have Jeff Goldblum as Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster. That was like triple Inception all at once, seamlessly. So, come on now. And then number one probably will always be Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Huh.
That movie, I saw it four times in 5 days.
That is
true.
And
I was not tired of it. I can't even tell you exactly what it is because it's not a perfect film. I can't tell you exactly what it is that made it so good to me. I think it was the tone was so different and they weren't afraid to essentially kind of point the finger at the authority figures and say, you know what? Anything might be suspect here.
Yeah.
I mean, Captain America, he's like, I was frozen for 70 years, but I didn't wake up a fool. And I really liked that movie. So that would be my number one still.
What about you, Spence? Do you need more time or you got this?
No, I got it. Me and Chad have a lot of the same in our top three. I think my order, though, is going to be for number three, it's going to be Thor Ragnarok.
Of course.
Jeff Goldblum is amazing. Plus, yes, they actually had some really awesome synth music in that movie. I really loved it. But what beats that is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, because that one had just an on-track on-point soundtrack.
There you go.
It's all about the music.
Everything just flowed so nicely from one scene to the next, and everything fit together so perfectly. It was really amazing. And then my number one is Black Panther.
Yes.
Because I saw that movie so many times that I don't know how many times I've seen that movie, and I loved it every time.
That's
I went there.
There you go.
Spencer single-handedly kept it at the top of the box office for like the first like six of its first 8 weeks.
So for me, number three is going to be Ragnarok, just because it's a super fun film. Like Chad said, it's one of those movies that you could just, you don't even need to see the rest of the Thor films to enjoy how ridiculously funny this movie is. I mean, it's Jeff Goldblum alone is worth watching this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My number two is Winter Soldier. It's like Tom Clancy meets Marvel, and I love Tom Clancy, and so this fit so well in terms of me wondering if, because this movie came out at a time where, in my mind, I was like, well, a lot of these movies are just kind of, it's all, you know, superhero-ish. It's more based on the comics, which is fine. But when this one came out, it was like a serious, like, political thriller, almost like. It was really great, and I love the dynamic of it. And then my number one has to go to, as well, Black Panther. I thought Black Panther did an incredible job, just not just on the surface level as a great origin story for a unique character that was almost never told. The story was never almost told in terms of in film.
Correction, it was an origin story for multiple unique, incredible characters.
You're right, actually. You're right. But seeing it actually debut and seeing all the implications that it had in terms of not just in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but also in its ability to speak to society and whatnot, I think, how can you not get behind something like that? So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, this Friday drops Infinity War, so if you didn't buy your tickets yet, you might be out of luck, but check your local theaters and find out. We're going to definitely be seeing it. We're going to have a great time. So if you want to check out our extra credit episode, we're going to be talking about on whether or not you should spoil films or not spoil films when you talk about them to other people. So stick around for that episode, as I'm pretty sure Spencer's got a lot to say about that.
Already have things to say.
So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.